It's your daily sports dump. And I'm your host, Joe Canelli. Yeah, that's right, folks. It's me, your host, Joe Canale. It's your daily sports dump. It's today, the 17th of April. It's a Friday, otherwise known as Friday, April 17th. Finally got that out the right way. Okay, let's get to we got a lot for you today. We actually rescheduled our screw-up from yesterday, so that's always nice. But before we get to crazy shit that happened in sports, we got some other stuff for you. So let's start with our fake sports highlight. Our fake sports highlight comes from last night's basketball. No, baseball. There was no basketball last night, even in the real world. So last night you wouldn't have missed anything. Playoffs would have started today, though. So that's bad. However, baseball, that goes on all the time, even when it's not. Our highlight today is from the Phillies-Brewers game. And what a game it was, or wasn't, as the case may be. We got our first no-hitter of the year, Aaron Nola. Aaron Nola throwing a no-hitter, only two walks and one error, which was a dropped fly ball by Bryce Harper. Speaking of Bryce Harper, Bryce, the score of the game was 2-0, thanks to back-to-back home runs from Rhys Hopkins and Bryce Harper in the seventh inning after Harper's error had let a man on base in the inning before. He hit the second of two back-to-back home runs. Now, the highlight of it is that Rhys Hopkins, he got around those bases pretty slowly. You know, he has a way of kind of trotting around the bases. Took him 23 seconds. Well, not to be outdone, Bryce Harper hit a bomb, ran super hard around first base, so much so that his helmet flew off. And then, almost as if he realized that Hopkins had taken 24 seconds before him, he slowed down between first and second and basically was almost at a crawl from third to home. That sounds totally plausible, folks. That could have actually happened. Now, the WNBA draft is tonight. I just want to say, as a New Yorker, the New York team has five of the first, like, 13 picks or 15 picks. It's incredible. I wish this was the Knicks, but this might be a reason for me to start following the New York Liberty, because they are going to get, unless they screw it up, only the Knicks would screw it up. The best all-around player in college basketball is available with the number one pick, Sabrina Ionescu. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but that's who they're going to get. That's on tonight. That's an actual sporting event, folks. So I'm just telling you, that's real sports you can watch tonight. And if you're in any way interested in teams compiling a ton of picks, the New York team can draft their new starting five today. In classic sports, well, basically classic sports right now is all leading up to this Jordan thing. Whether we're seeing some Kobe championships, I've seen some of the Golden State championships, and I've seen some LeBron championships being rebroadcast. These are all, and this is specifically on ESPN, this is all part of the, were the Bulls the greatest team ever? I don't know. Maybe Golden State was. Is Jordan the greatest player ever? I don't know. Maybe LeBron is. Oh, Kobe had his run. So everything right now in classic sports is surrounding this Jordan documentary. Everyone is trying to leech off of it, if you will. So that's why anyone's broadcasting anything right now. The other event controlling content right now is, of course, the NFL draft coming out next Thursday, meaning all these mock drafts are happening, including our mock draft update. Now, this is a big one, folks. This is CBS Sportsline's 7-round NFL mock draft, and this is a mock draft that we will be using to help make our mock draft on Monday. This is from RJ White. Thank you, RJ White. And again, folks, you never have to read any of the picks. Those are almost always the same. You just have to read the intro, and somewhere in the intro, the writer will tell you why you don't need to go on. So let's look into this one. We'll read some selections from his intro. It's time to go big or go home, or stay home. Good joke to start. Let's see. we can count on the Bengals taking Joe Burrow number one overall, but from there, it's anyone's guess what it will bring, both from a who-goes-where perspective and how it will go. So more importantly, the anyone's guess how it will go. There it is. That's saying it's anyone's guess, so your guess is as good as mine, so there's no reason to really read my guess. But, okay. One thing we're expecting to see is fewer trades, and that had an impact on my annual 7-round mock. Now, how can you predict trades with, like, 6-round picks? It's ridiculous. But this guy typically projects 30-plus trades when putting together the team-by-team mock. How can you predict 30 trades? But this year, he only managed a paltry 18 deals. This guy mocked 18 different trades. That's harder to do than to mock out all the picks. Da-da-da. From the, okay, and here's the very last line. You can also see all the mock trades from this thought experiment. There it is, folks. It's a thought experiment. So save your time and have your own thought experiment. And in fact, when we put out our mock draft on Monday, I don't want you to look at that one either. But my intro will explain everything. All right, that was our mock draft update for today. That might be our last mock draft update. I'll have to find out. That would be exciting, though. But now, something more exciting. A brand new segment that I screwed up yesterday and hopefully won't screw up today. It's Crazy Shit That Happened in Sports with David Pompey. Let's go to it. Dun, 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 dun. All right. Now, folks, this is take two of our new segment that we were supposed to unveil yesterday. If you listened to the episode yesterday, I'm sorry. It was basically 5 minutes of me being angry and explaining why this didn't happen. But now it's happening today, and I've got Dave Pompey back again with me for Crazy Shit That Happens in Sports, or that happened in sports, I should say. So, Dave, welcome again. Thank you for coming back today.
I'm happy to be back. I love the name of the segment, Crazy Shit That Happens in Sports. And you know, Joe, you are the only person that calls me Dave Pompey.
I am?
Nobody calls me that.
Everybody calls you Pomp or Pompey, right?
Pomp or Pompey. And so if somebody said, if I don't like hearing your voice clearly, but I hear Dave Pompey, I know it's you.
Well, it's funny because a lot of people call me Canale too, but you call me Joe.
Yeah, I just call you Joe.
But I have referred to you as Pompey many times.
Oh, many, many times.
Basically, whenever somebody goes, "What?" That's the. In my mind, maybe you don't think so, but in my mind, you originated that. And then Ed Furman, I've seen Ed Furman do his version of you doing that many times too, which I like. Ed Furman version. He can do the Pompey. What? Almost as good as you. But you still do it the best.
So that's pretty good.
All right. So what we're talking about in today's episode of Crazy Shit That Happened in Sports, and it's good that we did it yesterday because we got a little bit of it, sussed out. But the event we're going to talk about, and I'll just lead us in, and then I'll bring Dave in because he lived. On the south side of Chicago, and just a couple miles from where this happened. And what we're talking about is Disco Demolition Night in 1979. The brief version of it is a radio DJ named Steve Dahl working for The Loop in conjunction with, what's the guy's name who ran the White Sox? Bill Veeck, who was kind of
a promoter,
circus guy with the White Sox, put together this promotion of Disco Demolition Night, where they were going to blow up a bunch of records. Now, I'm going to go to you, Dave, to give me some of the background on this about Steve Dahl and him in Chicago and why he had a grudge against disco.
Yes. Well, Steve Dahl was born a DJ guy.
Yeah.
I think this was early shock radio days.
Yes.
I don't think Howard Stern was on the scene yet. And my ex, okay, because I was a little boy at the time.
Yeah.
But the repercussions went on for years, so as I got older, I understood more of it.
Right.
So he was a morning DJ who was a comedy guy. I believe he was from Detroit.
Yeah.
Well, he was in a smaller market, so Chicago was a step up for him.
Sure.
And he was on a rock station called WDAI.
Right.
And he would do all these characters. He would do his own weather, traffic. I remember this thing that used to make me laugh all the time. He would say, WDAI in the sky. And then he would do traffic, and it would be something like, a lot of cars out here. A lot of crappy drivers, too. All right, back to you, Steve.
Right.
And then he'd go back.
Yes.
He'd go back to his real point. So overnight, DAI went from a hard rock format to disco.
You say hard. You said hard rock to disco overnight.
Overnight, like no warning. The sponsors didn't know. I don't know what happened. That would be an interesting story.
Right, right. Why did they do that?
So he was out of the job. All the rock DJs were out of the job. If they didn't switch to disco, they were done. So Steve Dolan, he's like, I'm out. So he ended up at a station called WLUP. Loop,
yep.
Still going on today.
It is. It's a big rock station in Chicago.
It's the big rock station, and he had a serious grudge against disco. He started blowing up, shooting them. I think they were shooting them first.
Shooting the albums, sure.
Yeah, they would play a piece of whatever was a popular disco track, and they would do a scratch and
right.
the sound effect of gunfire.
Sure.
And then it became explosions, and they had the tagline. That blowed up real good. Like they were rednecks.
A redneck version of it. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, blowing up disco music. So this bit got popular. Steve Dahl was getting more and more popular. He started doing parodies on the disco records, but he could change the lyrics to insult them and stuff.
Ah.
So they became popular. People would call in and request them. And I think it got to the point that people would come in and on other people's shows, requesting to hear Steve Dahl's tracks. So he started going live with this. They were taking it to clubs, and I think they did it in the park. And it wasn't even a real explosion, Joe. It was more like a circus kind of fire from a cannon.
Right, right, right. Smoke, yeah.
The smoke pot, smoke in a flash pot, and like an air compressor, and the records were flying in the air. So they get the brilliant idea of doing this at Toslock.
Right.
In between games at a doubleheader.
Yes, a doubleheader. So it's after the first game, before the second game, and it's a big promotion for them, and they're offering all kinds of discounts. So.
Yes, that's another thing.
Yeah.
They were offering, if you bought a disco record, you got paid for less than $1. I believe it was 98 cents.
Okay. And it was probably like $7 to $20, depending on where you're sitting, for other tickets. But that's a pretty good discount.
We would go to South Park many times, but I can remember my father taking me there for a night game. But I cannot remember the prices.
Yeah, no, it's none of your business when you're a kid. You're not scalping tickets as a kid. Dad takes care of that.
I guess they didn't take into account the neighborhood.
Right.
So there was, how can I explain this? Three worlds converged.
Yes, that's a good way to explain it. On the south side of Chicago, right around Comiskey Park, Chicago is obviously a diverse big city, but it is an incredibly segregated city in terms of like neighborhood demarcations. So go into that about the south side neighborhoods.
Well, right here where Comiskey Park was, in that little area, the 35th Street and State Street is a big commercial area. The Illinois Institute of Technology campus is right there.
Right.
Some of the administrative buildings are right there, and that is one of the most prestigious technological universities in the country.
Right.
And then you got commercial businesses, restaurants, nightclubs, all right there. There's a famous McDonald's right there.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody would go to, and then on the exact same corner where there's IIT, the CTA metro station, the big McDonald's on the very right across the street is the Robert Taylor Homes.
Right.
One of the most rough, tourist, most dangerous places to go in the city.
Yeah. big projects. We mentioned Cabrini Green yesterday, but those Robert Taylor homes were just as bad, if not worse, perhaps.
Oh, if not worse. They were fenced off. It was literally like going into a prison.
Fenced off. It's like a refugee camp.
Yeah, it was really bad. And we didn't even go over there. Okay? I'm telling you, it was tough over there. And like you'd meet two girls and they'd invite you over and say, oh, where do you live? Oh, I'm on 51st and Federal. I ain't going over there. You're going to have to meet me over on King Drive.
Well, I hope there's nothing bad going on King Drive. Everybody should get along on King Drive.
It was bad, but at least if there was a fire, they wouldn't shoot at the fire.
Okay. We haven't gotten to the crazy part yet. Yeah. But shooting a fireman's a good lead-in.
Buddy, these three worlds
and the Italians, too, right?
Oh, I didn't even get it for that. Okay, so on the other side of the Dan Ryan, west of the Dan Ryan, in the Comiskey Park area, Bridgeport area.
Bridgeport, yes.
It was at that time run by the Chicago Mob.
Yeah.
And everybody knew it. It was an outfit area. These young Sicilian toughs and these guys you'd read about in the paper, they lived over there. The mayor lived over there.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody knew, like, Chicago's like Philly. It was a mob town.
Exactly.
It may still be. I don't know.
Well, yes. Any union town's a little bit of a mob town.
Yes. So there was this, like, you couldn't go over there. So if you went to a Sox game, about an hour or so, you need to be gone after the game's over. You got to clear out. You can't hang out over there. They're not going to let you.
Right.
So if you're hanging out after the game, the cops will make you leave, or you certainly don't want any of these mob guys or their affiliates to send people over to tell you to leave.
Right, right.
But you could go to Riccobini's.
Which is like the mob deli.
The food was good. I can recall us, like, after a Sox game, going to Riccobini's, and I'm telling you, dude, it was like a scene from a mob movie in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
These young Italian guys will come up to you and be like, hey, where you going?
Yeah.
We're like, oh, we're just going to Riccobini's. We're like, oh, okay.
Nothing has been worse for Italians than mob movies, because then every Italian thinks that they're some freaking Goomba tough guy. I bet you more Italians have gotten the shit kicked out of them because they watched some mob movie and thought they could just tough some guy up, and then they realize, oh, in real life, you got to back it up.
Hey, I wouldn't doubt it. But there was an uneasy truce, you know, like,
yes.
We knew we could go to Riccobini's, and then on the other side of the Dan Ryan was the McDonald's.
Right.
After a Sox game, all the black folks would usually go to the McDonald's, and you'd see a few tourists or you'd see people from the suburbs that didn't quite know.
Right. We'll take the red line into the city.
Right. And they'd go to McDonald's too, which is fine. You know what you mean?
Yeah, man. Everybody eats McDonald's.
There would be gangbangers trying to set them up, you know, trying to lure people away from the McDonald's so they could rob them.
Right.
And this, that, and the other. So it was a little bit of it going on both sides. But it was uneasy. We understood you go to Riccobini's, but don't hang out. And they understood if you go to that McDonald's, you could run into some trouble.
Right. So everybody, the neighborhood's got some, like, you know, tensions and understandings, but, you know, there's territorial stuff going all around Comiskey Park there, that whole area.
And then everybody knows you don't go on the IIT campus if you're not a student, because the campus police will get you and the Chicago police will get you, because they don't want any trouble near the university.
No, they want to keep their schools, crime-free or whatever.
Right, no trouble near IIT.
So we cut to – go ahead. I was going to say we cut to the game now, and now they've offered discounted admission to people if they bring in a disco record. Now, you're saying a lot of people didn't have the disco records and just would go just to get in because it's still cheaper to buy a shitty record, right?
Right. So when word got out that you could go to the Sox game for under $1, everybody wanted to go. And like these people listening to this rock station, they didn't have disco records. And they're not going to go out and pay full price, you know, for Gloria Gaynor.
No.
So they would go to the little thrift shops, you know, where there used to be a lot of shops that sold used records.
Yeah.
And you could get, you could get an album for a buck. And they were just buying any black music and showing up with it. jazz albums.
Disco, the definition of disco for that night expanded into anything with a black person.
Anything with a black face on it. Okay, yeah. And a lot of these people weren't necessarily going to the Sox game. They just wanted to go
yes.
to the Steve Dahl event.
Right.
So they didn't show up for the first game.
Right.
They showed up like the seventh inning stretch.
Yes.
They'd show up and try to get in. So there were thousands of people outside that couldn't get in. The event was sold out.
Nice.
I believe it was actually over.
Well, obviously
so
oversold, yeah.
All of these people inside with records. So you know they start throwing them. They start throwing them like Christmas.
It's such a bad idea. Like, in retrospect, how did it even get off the ground? Like, don't you? You gotta take human nature into account.
Oh, boy. So, so I've seen the videos. Like,
yeah.
I remember as a kid watching it on TV. Steve Dahl comes out and he's singing his parody song and he's wearing an army coat.
Yeah.
And I remember he had an army helmet on.
Yes, I've seen the video, yes.
Right, his wire-rimmed glasses. You can't hear him. There's something wrong. He's singing into this mic. You can't hear him. The track, the music's off. The fans don't like it. And they get to blow up the disco record, and the thing doesn't work.
Right.
It's this cheap, like, circus act thing. So the smoke comes out. There's a flash. The timing is off. The records don't fly. So somebody gets the brilliant idea of starting a fire in the bin.
Right.
Right? They've got a giant trash bin.
With a bunch of cardboard record and then vinyl. Yeah. Cardboard record album covers and vinyl.
In between the pitchers found in second base, I believe.
Yes, it was on the infield.
And so people see this and they start running on the field trying to throw their records into the bin. Other people just start running on the field. They're throwing records. I don't know, the fire, they couldn't get the fire started, and it was like somebody sees fire, so they set a fire. Then
elsewhere.
That bonfire. Oh, my dude. There's bonfires in the outfield. People. Steve Dahl was like, holy shit, what have I done? Like, dude, it was
they had to cancel the second game. I believe the White Sox forfeit the game, I think.
They could not clear the field. Security couldn't clear the field. The cops couldn't clear the field. So then they start riding in with horses.
That's going to make it better.
to you know, a line of these giant horses. And so these giant cop horses, and they finally were able to restore order. But the field was in, like, burned.
Yes, that's right. There was damage to the field.
Damage to the field. They couldn't play the second game. And I think, if my memory serves, a game or two after that had to be canceled until they got the field right or postponed. Or maybe the Sox had to go on the road.
Right, right. While they fixed
the
thing.
They lost home games or something.
I don't know.
Massive lawsuits.
I know that they don't do shit like that anymore. And it's probably because that in all honesty, when you consider all the factors in this, the fact that no one got really injured or hurt when there's a riot kind of being in encouraged, the fact that there were no deaths is actually the best part of the story, because it's amazing that happened.
It's amazing. And I know there were some fights, but I don't remember that there was, like, you know, usually when you say riot, this
right.
person's trying
yes.
to get this other person.
Right.
I think it was more a release.
Yes.
Like a freedom that these people just suddenly had this freedom and they went nuts.
And you know what? That's human nature. Like, it doesn't take much. It's why when teams win a title, I'm always like, why are people flipping cars? You
yes.
won a title.
Yes.
But it's like, you're right. It sets off this kind of, like, mood of, like, we can do whatever we want, this purge mentality. And
the
then
police can't stop us.
Yes, and on top, and then a tinderbox like that Southside neighborhood, it really is kind of amazing it turned out the way it did. Now, the one thing, the loop is, as we said, that kind of made the loop, I think.
I think so.
Because now that station is, and you said it yesterday, where the hell is, what's the other station?
WDAI,
yeah.
Where the hell are they?
Right.
They're gone.
You never switch to disco, guys. Never switch to the fad music of the day.
Yeah.
When you're a rock station. If rock stations are like, we're going to go straight K-pop, That's a bad move.
A bad move, because in a couple of years, nobody's going to be listening to K-pop.
Exactly. But everyone still knows the Loop, and in Chicago, they still know Steve Dahl. So yeah. Although it was a crazy shit that happened in sports, again, we're talking about it, so we're not necessarily against crazy shit that happens in sports. We're not saying it's an overall bad thing. We're just saying that it's crazy shit, and we're, yeah. And especially right now when we got no real sports to talk about.
Yeah, everybody's, and I guess there was an anniversary of this label. Not, well, actually, July, it's coming up. Some anniversary's coming up. And what strikes me as interesting and funny in a lot of ways, Joe, is that the way it's being looked at kind of romantically, nostalgia.
Right, like, we didn't get into this much, but it was there were the anger. That's the thing that we talked about yesterday we haven't gotten to yet, is the nostalgia they look back on it at, when really, like you said, they're buying black records, not even knowing what disco is necessarily. You can't help but notice there's a bit of a tone of like, let's burn pictures of black people. Let's throw albums of black music that we may or may not even know into a bin and burn it in celebration.
Yes, and they're giving us a discount to come to this sporting event
to burn,
if we do it.
Right. Gosh, yeah, you're right. There are elements of it where it's like a Nazi book burning, but with music.
But with music.
Yes.
And he's got a military outfit on.
Right. Oh, my God. Good. Now it's taking a darker tone, obviously, that's the part that, like,
visceral, I don't know, visceral is probably the word. There's a certain visceral thing that happened most of the day that I think just ignited. What were you going to say?
I was looking for the words that you just said. Yes, there's something within people. The riot thing, basically the White Sox gave angry white people an outlet to take out their racism.
Just unbelievable.
And what a surprise that it didn't turn out to be a huge success.
What a surprise. But I also saw something the other day when I was doing a little research, trying to jog my memory about some of these events.
Sure.
And I saw somebody was trying to say that it was an attack on feminism because that disco was mostly run by women, gay men, and minorities.
Mm.
I don't know if I agree with that because there was, like, we're talking the Bee Gees. They were the ones winning. Like, the iconic image of disco isn't black music. Like,
no.
To black folks, it was just music.
Yes, right.
Some French guy named it disco.
Yeah.
So, and what's the iconic image? The iconic image? It's not black folks dancing in a club. It's a white guy in a white suit pointing in the air.
Yes.
From
John Travolta, perhaps the least funky man in the world.
Yeah, what was that? Well, Saturday Night Fever.
Saturday Night Fever, right.
So, I don't know, like, when the Bee Gees, when he's walking down the street fluffing his hair in his own reflection, right?
Right.
And that dance track is playing and the Bee Gees are singing, I can tell by the way I use my walk, I'm a ladies' man, no time to talk. I don't think they were making a feminist statement.
No, that's not very feminist-friendly, that point of view. And you're right, as you talk about it, maybe some of the music was being made by minorities, gays, and women in that realm more than other music, but that doesn't mean they were the ones making the money on it. And you're right, the icons of that era, strangely, are white men. Or like we talked about it yesterday, like ABBA. Like, okay, that's a disco band, but man, when I think, and I like their music too, but again, it's all those beats are lifted from other stuff.
Yes, they are.
Well,
it's similar to rock and roll, which it was just R&B, it was just music until Alan Freed named it rock and roll and packaged it for white people.
Dave, all music.
So
did you watch the country music thing? My biggest revelation on country music is this. The Carter family, like, they were the big country family, the first starters of it. Here's how they did it. Pa Carter drove around rural Tennessee and went to poor people, white and black, and said, hey, sing me a song. They sang him his songs. He wrote them down. He went back into Nashville, and he sold them. So even country music is stolen from black people. Which I couldn't. I mean, it all comes from the blues, essentially. You know.
The blues comes from. Yes. Basically, all music, well, American music, comes from country.
Yeah.
Because the blues comes from what we call country music.
Or the other way around. It's all kind of the same, country and blues, depending on where you're talking
about. Where you're from. They call it blues. But black, we as black people learn that music from white people as far as the old country stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Because so African rhythms, you still hear African rhythms in all music today, Latino music, Caribbean music, you hear African rhythms.
Yep.
So the brothers brought the drums.
Right. Yes.
And the poor white guys brought the strings.
Oh, my God. This is a...
And they together, poor people made a music.
Oh, man. That's so obvious, and yet I had never really come to that realization. The black people brought the drums, and the white people had the strings, and then you get the blues.
That's right, and everybody was suffering.
Yes.
Until governments got in and told people, you can't work with that person, you can't.
Right.
People were working together for many, many years.
Right.
Until racism became...
Government sanctioned?
They had to.
Yeah.
They had to. They were hungry.
No, of course. Well,
and the music came out of that. The poetry came out of it. The culture.
The good thing is, of all these things, you know, disco demolition and all the good thing is that there is no more racism anymore, so we don't have to worry about stuff like that. Now that we're all in such a good place, we don't
that's
have to worry. It's nice
it.
To look back on, you know, the bad old days. Now that things have turned so good.
Thank you, Steve.
And Dave, I'm going to thank you for coming back a second day and doing this. We shaved a few minutes off, but we got all the same info in, and I'm not as angry as I was anymore, and I am not going to erase this. But the intro...
Make a second copy.
Yes, I'm saving it right now after we get off the phone. I want to thank you, Dave, and we'll be talking to Dave again on draft night. When he calls in for the Minnesota Vikings as our Minnesota Vikings correspondent on draft night. So I'll have more for that for you later. Thank you, Dave, for crazy shit that happened in sports, disco demolition version. And I want to thank you folks for listening to the Sports Dump. Every weekday, your daily Sports Dump. And please follow us at Sports Dump Show on Twitter or Sports Dump Show on Twitter and the_sports_dump on Instagram because I screwed that up. We're going to be broadcasting live for the NFL Draft on Thursday with lots of comedians calling in to help. And we have a special prize to give out if you follow us on Twitter and list your Mr. Irrelevant, the person you think will be picked last in the draft, we will give you prizes. So please go on there and do that. Hashtag Mr. Irrelevant. Talk at you. Oh, have a good weekend. Talk to you Monday when we unveil our new and only one NFL mock draft.